make a conspicuous appearance.
This is what they did with Rock Hudson.
I know. Rock Hudson must have been a much better hang than frickin' Lindsey Graham.
Oh, absolutely.
God. This throwback comes on the heels of unsubstantiated rumors that the single house member might be a closeted homosexual. Last fall, Graham's critics tried to force him out of the presumed closet after he had shown support for President Donald Trump. To the extent that it matters, I'm not gay, Graham told TMZ at the time. So, what do you call a double beard?
I mean, just
a really thick one, I guess. I mean, I'm sorry to speculate, Laura, but that was one of the horniest and weirdest things I've ever seen on TV. And now that I see that you, like, it was apparently leaked to the press, and this is the most planted story I've ever read in my whole life. That you dated Lindsey Graham, that straight sexual matador, I have to start asking some questions.
Together. Yeah, wow.
I wish these people would just live their truth and stop making everybody else's problem. God damn.
Like, Lindsey, everyone thinks you're gay. Let's go to, Bennigan's or wherever it was.
I mean, truly. The Republican, I mean, I'm not trying to be too Hunter Biden-y here, but the Republican Party is very much, I guess, some sort of, like, Lavender gang, right?
Has anybody posited the theory that he faked his death so that he could run as Darlene? And
I think we were on that on day one. Like, yeah. The second I saw his sister was stepping into his, it's like, okay, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, okay.
Senator Doubtfire.
God. The Republican Party, the Lavender Syndicate. Yeah. It's all a conspiracy. Man. Laura's lesbian yearning was something to behold, I gotta say. You shouldn't do that on Maine, girlfriend. Save that for another
time.
It's
leaking out, Laura.
Yeah, it's leaking. Laura's lesbian leak out is what we're gonna call this segment.
The heat is on them when they do this.
Yeah. In a moment, we're gonna be talking to Crystal Ball, but first, a word from one of our favorite sponsors. We have talked about OneSkin a lot. OneSkin really stands out as a skincare care company, not because of fancy packaging or hype, but because of the real science behind it. I am a big fan of their daily moisturizer, but what I love to tout is their eye cream. You got to be proactive about crow's feet and stuff like that. And as somebody who, you know, is I'm laughing a lot. I get these smile lines, and that's what we do on the show, like what we were just doing, laughter. And so I got to worry about
notorious for causing smile lines.
Okay, well, try being a woman, right?
The numbers will be better, but we're hurting their crow's feet.
Well, I have a solution for you. Because honestly, eye cream is really difficult to find. Like, the skin above your eyes is really sensitive, especially if, you know, you struggle with like things like eczema and stuff like that, and issues with. Don't say you.
No, I said hello.
Okay.
Because I do struggle with that.
Okay.
It's a you. Ew, what do we do?
All right, get it together. Okay, OneSkin truly is a great product. I've recommended it to so many people. I'm getting it as a gift for somebody later on. I hope they're not listening to this. But I love their eye cream. It has the perfect level of, like, lightness, and it does not irritate the skin around my eyes. But I'm also a daily user of their OS1 peptide daily moisturizer. Because as we age, some skin cells stop functioning the way that they should, and longevity scientists call them zombie cells. That is what's actually driving those visible signs of aging. The fine lines, loss of firmness, dullness, and that creeps in over time. And OneSkin's OS1 peptide was specifically engineered to address those issues. So you're getting everything you expect from great skincare, with OS1 doing something most skincare was never built to do. And the more that I use it, the more that I notice a difference. And with summer here, that matters even more, because up to 80% of visible skin aging starts with sun exposure. But OneSkin's new limited edition summer bundles have you covered. It's their skincare and SPF essentials paired together. So the OS1 peptide is helping to reverse the visible effects of UV aging, which I need, while you're getting SPF protection from new damage. It's a great system to summer-proof your skin. You really don't need a complicated routine to get healthier, younger-looking skin. I would like to thank OneSkin for sponsoring today's episode. Born from over a decade of longevity research, OneSkin is helping you unlock your healthiest skin now and as you age. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code MAJORITY at oneskin.co/majority. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code MAJORITY. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. We'll put a link down below in the video and episode descriptions and at majority.fm. Get 15% off OneSkin with the code MAJORITY at www.oneskin.co/majority. All right, quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Crystal. We are back, and I am so happy to be joined by my friend Crystal Ball, co-host of Crystal, Kyle, and Friends, and Breaking Points. Crystal, welcome back to the show.
It is my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I always love to talk to you and always love to break down the news of the week, and I think we'll probably start in a big picture way about these national stories, and perhaps
we're not starting with LeBron James.
We are not. And when you texted me, I was like, oh, no, I hope she's not canceling. But it was just to talk basketball. So you're a woman after my own heart, per usual. Not about LeBron James, although, yes, the East just got a lot more interesting and I'm not thrilled about it. Sure. I'm sure Kyle isn't thrilled about it either, right?
No. And my son is like a monster LeBron fan, and he loves the Knicks, but he also loves Miami. He was really hoping LeBron was going to Miami.
Right.
So he's not happy with this. He has complicated emotions right now. Bless his little 13-year-old heart.
I'm sure he's been, really a big fan of those Miami highlight reels during that time with Chris Bosh and Wade.
Oh, yeah.
Watching those, yes.
I mean, oh, yeah.
It's hard not to watch that and fall in love with that kind of basketball.
If anyone is looking for someone to argue with that, LeBron is not the GOAT, if they want someone to take the yes, he is the GOAT side for roughly 12 hours straight, my son is the man for the job.
Honestly, you should reach out to Stephen A. Smith and see if your son will get
God.
On the other.
I mean,
Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless is the LeBron hater, actually. I apologize. So, okay, let's start with Iran in related news. Let's start with the Iran war, because the Trump administration appears to be covering up the true number of U.S. military personnel who have been killed in this horrific war on Iran, criminal war on Iran. Trump's been using this figure of 18 deaths for days, repeatedly in remarks, because he's trying to say, oh, let's compare this to Vietnam, where he's been using made up figures like 200,000 Americans that died in Vietnam, which isn't what happened. Or this isn't as bad as Iraq. But yesterday, even though he's been saying 18 all week, the Pentagon changed its number on its website from 18 to 14. And it's because they're claiming that since Trump signed this MOU and since there has been a ceasefire, even though it's been broken, that none of the deaths count. Like, what do you make of this? And I also am curious if you can put it in the context of the Iraq war, because the Bush administration was trying to cover up troop deaths as well.
Yeah, they didn't want any of the caskets coming home to be filmed because there were so many Americans who were being killed, and they knew it would be devastating to public opinion and public sentiment, and that certainly was the case. And no, I mean, it's really disgusting. I mean, you look at this 19-year-old girl who, you know, 1 year older than my daughter. I couldn't help thinking about my daughter just graduated from high school. And at her graduation ceremony, they had all the kids who were signing up for the military stand up. And, you know, this is them. This is their lives. And she's now dead. For what? For what? Now you're not even going to reflect it in the official statistics. And they've already been caught hiding the overall casualty numbers, which are, you know, well into the 400s that we know of. Service members are complaining about the lack of medical care that they've been receiving. They've been downplaying some of the severity of the injuries that they've received. And the reason is because they know that this war is disastrously unpopular. They know it is an absolutely catastrophic mistake at this point, but they are flailing around because they have no plan. I mean, Trump, I think, really believed that this would be like, oh, in 3 days, we'll just, you know, do what we did with Venezuela and I'll be fine and I'll be greeted as a liberator, mission accomplished, et cetera. Now here we are, months and months into this, and all he can think to do is, you know, more bombing campaigns and complete insanity and lies.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal reported today that Trump basically sees few options except escalation. He's apparently grown skeptical of negotiations, shocker, and he doesn't see better options than continuing strikes. And I know that you at Breaking Points have had Professor Robert Pape on regularly, who's spoken about the escalation trap. I mean, this is an example of somebody who doesn't have the moral character, fortitude, foresight, intelligence to understand when he needs to, he didn't understand why he shouldn't have started this war in the first place, but mm-hmm. He's the exact kind of rube that can be manipulated into furthering this escalation trap because he sees no other options and Iran has won, and that's untenable to a guy like Trump.
That's exactly right. You know, if he was to walk away now, if he had gone forward with the memorandum of understanding, it would have meant acknowledging complete defeat. You know, Robert Pape describes it as a surrender document. I mean, that's truly what it is. So with that direction, he has a certain defeat. Whereas if he entertains some of these insane options, oh, let's seize Karg Island, let's bomb or nuke Pickaxe Mountain because the conventional weapons wouldn't be sufficient, that somehow maybe this has an outside chance to turn the tables. And so when greeted with a landscape that's either accept complete defeat with something like the memo of understanding and an eventual deal, or take some insane gambler's risk on some absolute boondoggle that is going to result in catastrophic loss of life, you know, both for Americans and for Iranians, he'd rather go in that direction because then at least there's some theoretical chance that he can come out with something he can sell as a win. And as insane as that landscape is to us, when you're looking at this and you're just like, just cut your losses, like that's the best thing you can do at this point. I think he sees it as it's unacceptable to him to accept the defeat that has been rendered on the battlefield. And that's why it's such a terrifying moment in terms of the likely escalation that we face, I think, as soon as this weekend.
Yeah, the teasing of the massive attack could be another way to try to scare the Iranians, as he'd been doing on Truth Social, threatening to nuke them. Yeah. But how can we rule out another deadly attack? And we're getting
We know that they sent some sort of a new ceasefire deal to Iran via the Iraqi prime minister, and Iran said no. We spoke with Professor Mirandi on our show to get the view from Tehran. He said, listen, first of all, no one is in the mood for negotiations right now, because why would we be? Every time we've negotiated with the U.S., we've either been attacked or they've undermined the deal. So no one is in the mood for negotiations. But if we get to that point, it's going to require a lot more than was in the memo of understanding. It won't just include Lebanon, by the way. It will also include Yemen and Gaza. So that's the frame of mind that they're in. So I was not surprised at all to see that they had out of hand, outright rejected this latest ceasefire deal offer. So what choice does that leave Trump with? You know, I think that's why, even though in past instances where he's issued these insane threats, I've suspected that he would end up tacoing in the end. That's why this time I'm more concerned that we're going to see the actual threatened escalation come to pass.
I think Iran sees his belligerence as even more evidence that their leverage is increasing and is stronger. When he continues to use the same exact tactics, this is not to downplay, you know, the deaths that the United States has caused by bombing Iran and the civilian infrastructure that has been damaged. But Iran, with every day, understands that they can just use their geographic leverage over the Strait of Hormuz, and perhaps they can dangle some sort of concession on a nuclear program for the Trump administration. But that's the only. But that would be because they understand now that they don't even really fully need a nuclear weapon as a deterrent if they're able to make the West feel this economic pain. But that would require Israel included, because if the United States has this understanding with Iran, but Israel is still acting as this rogue actor as a nuclear power in the region, then they're expanding their operations in the West Bank right now, and they're trying to spark the civil war in Lebanon. Then, I mean, that is what I think could tank these negotiations, if they're even plausible at this point anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, the nuclear piece is, I guess you could look at it in two directions. In some ways, the logic of pursuing a nuclear weapon has never been more clear. You know, these people are maniacs. They'll just keep attacking you. You should pursue it so that you have this deterrent. On the other hand, to your point, the Strait of Hormuz acts in a sense as like its own deterrent effect. Over time, though, the impact of that will diminish as new pipelines, new routes are created, as the world transitions, realizing that, hey, maybe we shouldn't like base our entire economies on this very volatile geopolitical situation backed, you know, by fossil fuels. Maybe we should transition to renewable energy. The power of that geographic advantage will ebb over the years. That won't be an immediate impact, but that will happen over years. So that does still argue in favor of the notion that a nuclear weapon could be important for them if they want to, you know, persist as a national entity with sovereignty.
Yeah, that was more maybe wishful thinking for me, because there has to be something where Trump feels like he has some aesthetic victory, and he's seemingly, you know, hung his hat a lot on preventing these monsters from getting a nuclear weapon and destroying the world as two nuclear armed countries bomb their country. It's just completely topsy turvy. But I'm wondering if you, since you interact with conservatives more than I do on your show, like, what is the reaction to this war from them? I mean, it's hard to judge the sincerity of the Republican base when they were swayed by the no new wars and I'll fix the economy piece. But at least for like an independent, unaligned voter that, you know, maybe voted for Obama and then switched to Trump or whatever, this is not just a betrayal of a campaign promise. It's like a complete inversion of what he promised. And that has to have some impact. I would hope that it does.
You would hope so. I don't know. I don't delude myself into thinking that Sagar and Emily represent the Republican base. And I don't think they delude themselves that way either. But I think the Republican base is overwhelmingly still in favor of the war. But the piece that is more problematic for Trump politically, I think, is the economic piece. You know, they can tell themselves all sorts of lies based on Fox News propaganda about how glorious the war is and how great we're doing and how strong our fighters are and how smart President Trump is, blah, blah, blah. Like, if you watch that channel, it is crazy, the amount of propaganda. And boomers are the core of the Republican base. For all the talk about the young Republicans, this is a boomer-led party. So that stuff is still extremely powerful with them. However, you cannot deny the reality of going to the gas pump and seeing, you know, now today, I think the average gas price across the country is $4.11. That's only going to go up from here. And that's going to continue to have catastrophic ripple impact effects. It's already had massively negative effects on most ordinary Americans who are struggling. So I think that's the piece where he's probably more politically vulnerable with his own base. Not that they're going to turn on him, but you know, maybe they don't show up in the midterms. Maybe they're a little disenchanted, you know, and maybe there is some erosion around the margins where finally they go, you know what, this guy's never going to actually deliver anything for me. And my life is actually worse than before he came into office.
What's also astonishing to me is that Trump is trying to basically force the Abraham Accords into these negotiations by dangling nuclear cooperation with Saudi Arabia over their head to essentially say, we will give you this technology and we'll cooperate with you in this way if you normalize relations with Israel. And this is at a time when that normalization is a lot more costly for a Saudi government that at the very least has a population that it has to contend with. It's not just like a glorified corporate entity in the way that the UAE is, right?
Yeah,
that is eager to normalize. Saudi Arabia still has a population that is horrified by the genocide in Gaza. But like, to me, I wonder who is pushing Trump to escalate or to return to the Abraham Accords within the context of these negotiations when Israel's leverage or standing in the region is even worse than when he had attempted it previously. Like, it feels like a literal poison pill, frankly, by Zionists to tie this to the Iran war or to do this at the same time or in conjunction. Like, how does that not sabotage so many of the other regional issues that is plaguing the president right now?
I mean, it's a complete mess. I mean, first of all, we get the announcement that just with no requirements whatsoever, we're going to go forward with this Saudi nuclear deal. I don't need to remind everyone who actually were the nationality of the hijackers on 9/11. So there's an issue there where we're saying, oh, Iran is so evil, we can't give them nuclear weapons. It's like, who attacked us on 9/11 again? Just remind me that. So there's that piece. Then the next day he comes out and says, well, actually, it's going to be tied to them joining the Abraham Accords. Well, the reason that Saudi Arabia has always resisted going forward with the Abraham Accords and normalization of Israel is because they've insisted on some real genuine horizon for a Palestinian state. And even there, you know, they left some wiggle room of like, it doesn't have to be immediate, but we need some genuine path that's going to lead in that direction. And obviously that's completely off the table for Israel. So I'm not sure what's going on behind the scenes there. I think that Trump promised the Gulf Arab allies of the United States that this war was going to be quick and easy. They sort of bought into that idea. You know, they saw what we did in Venezuela. You're this big superpower, you're going to be paired with Israel. You can deal with this Iranian thorn in our side. That sounds great. And then once they realize the reality that, oh, Iran can fight back and now our countries are getting hit and our entire, you know, existence in this region is in danger because you can't live in that region without electricity, without desalination plants, without importing a lot of goods to feed the population and sustain the population. You know, once they realized that, they became a lot less enamored with this idea of the Iran war. So, you know, my sense was Trump was trying to throw them some bone. You also can't disentangle any of this from all of the business interests that he and his family members have in the region. You know, usually the easiest explanation for things that are happening here is just straightforward corruption. So that's the other piece you have to take into account, too.
And lastly, before we move, I think, to elections, your thoughts on the National Defense Authorization Section 219, the passage of this entrenchment of military technology with Israel, Israel's military as it commits genocide in Gaza. And right now, the West Bank annexation efforts are escalating. Southern Lebanon, they're trying to create this civil war. The Trump administration is as well, and Israel, by aligning itself with this kind of skeleton Lebanese government and saying that we're not going to remove Israeli forces from southern Lebanon until Hezbollah is fully disarmed, which would take years. Talk about another poison pill to keep these wars ongoing. But Netanyahu, you know, after Lindsey Graham's death, was going on TV saying, Lindsey told me right before he died that, like, he didn't... We don't want him to cut aid to Israel, but I'm saying we don't need it anymore. We don't need it anymore because he understands that this MOU that Obama signed expires in 2028. That's going to be a big election year, and Israel funding for Israel that used to be kind of automatic under this MOU is going to be at issue. So why not put this outside of kind of any democratic input and basically circumvent democracy so that Israel is even more entangled with the United States.
I was just watching one of those Harry Enten polling clips about the view of Israel, and he was saying, listen, you may think this is a Democratic Party shift. No, this is the entire American people who have changed their minds, especially right. Democrats and independents, a little bit less so Republicans, but you see shifts there as well. There's been something like, I think the number was like a 65-point shift away from favorability of Israel since Trump's first term to this term. So look, Israelis, you know, Netanyahu et al., they're not stupid. They can read a poll. They see the way that the politics are going. They're watching what's playing out in Democratic primaries right now. And so there's no doubt they're moving in the direction of, okay, any sort of process that requires a vote, that requires any sort of democratic input is going to be shaky. So we need to entrench this thing. We need to put it outside of politics so that there isn't a public check, there isn't public accountability, and that it's very difficult to disentangle, even if you do get, you know, President AOC or President Abdul al-Sayed in 2028. So, I think there's no doubt that's the direction they're going in. And, you know, kudos to the few members who've really spoken out. The Democratic Party has been pretty good. They blocked originally the version that had this in the Senate, although this wasn't the only reason they're blocking the NDAA. And that's my other thing. I don't know why any Democrat is voting for any NDAA right now, regardless of what's in it, while Trump is waging an illegal and unconstitutional war.
I loved that you asked that of Representative Adam Smith. We played part of that interview. People should all check it out on Breaking Points. But like this is about leverage. You know, he tried to say in that interview, like, well, the DSA wants to get rid of the Pentagon altogether, which isn't true on the
Not
program.
Even true.
It's a 50% reduction. Right. But he was using that to say that, like, anybody that's calling for like an attempt to use the NDAA here as leverage to slow the roll of this administration is on the side of getting rid of the Pentagon. It was such a like straw man to try to defang those arguments. But putting that to the side for a second, what a coincidence. There were just enough Democrats to pass the National Defense Authorization Act. And it wasn't even some of the usual suspects that we would suspect, like the biggest Zionists in the Democratic caucus in the House, Jared Moskowitz, who was worried about Oliver Larkin down in Florida, was not a vote for this NDAA. Josh Gottheimer, who was in a blue state in New Jersey, was not a vote. But they had some rotating villains to do their dirty work. Cuellar's always down to do it. Glusenkamp Perez is a psycho, so fine. But it's just always, it's such a weird coincidence how the Democrats seem to find six or seven votes whenever they need to pass bills that help the military-industrial complex and do what the Zionist lobby wants.
Well, it was very telling in that interview with Representative Adam Smith, because he's fighting with me about this, about like, well, you know, we don't have the leverage that you think and it's probably not going to work and blah, blah, blah. But he also was like, yeah, but I'm going to vote against it. I was like, okay, well, are your colleagues going to go along? He's like, yeah, probably not everybody. And sort of in that answer, it shows you, it's like, okay, well, shouldn't you be working on that? Like, isn't that a problem? That makes your vote kind of meaningless if you're going to get just enough Democrats to get this thing across the finish line. And of course, that's what ends up happening. I just have to say on this Marie Glusenkamp Perez person, what is with the archetype of like the hippie who is now like weirdly right wing? Like, this is like a Kyrsten Sinema archetype. It's a Maha archetype. There's a whole thing that needs to be dug into about what is happening with these people, because I don't really understand it.
And they're often moms that are like, exploiting kind of anxiety about healthcare and like personal choices in this way and what's going into their kids' bodies. Like, I think that's part of it too. And not that Kyrsten Sinema is, but like, yeah, it's people that they think wellness or smoking weed or something like that is leftism, but their politics don't align with that. I mean, that's, I guess, the best way I could describe it.
Yeah, and it's like partly libertarian, but then also I'm going to vote for the NDAA to like help enable the like fascist rise in travel. Like, I don't know. I don't understand where you're coming from on any of this.
They're appealing to like wellness moms and trad wife types, I think, to a degree, but I think it's so niche and online. I really don't. I don't get it either. Let's talk about another weirdo, actually. Haley Stevens.
Yes.
although I don't want to be called...
Don't be sexist, Emma.
I know. I'm sorry. I can't get rid of my internalized misogyny making fun of Haley Stevens and her, you know, gremlin-like demeanor. Okay. Sorry, Haley. This is On the Substance, girlfriend. What, over the past 48 hours, we've seen two acts of desperation from this campaign. Ryan Grimm, great reporting, showed that they basically had to fire this top staffer because she was also working for Palantir on the side, when you thought the campaign couldn't get any more slimy. And can we put up the tear sheet here from, I don't know what number this is, but this, oh, here it is, number 8. This is a press release that they sent out using Abdul al-Sayed's logo, which I cannot believe is legal, but I guess I can. I can believe it because this is America and we have no campaign finance regulation. But using his ad to talk about the Mike Rogers, you know, and claim that Mike Rogers is endorsing Abdul al-Sayed, you know, just saying what you would say if you're thinking you're going to face off against him in a general, like claiming, I think we feel good about our chances against this guy, right? And she's sending this out in this press release, in this email blast, and this is the same campaign that's welcoming in tens of millions of dollars of outside money from AIPAC, from big tech. They're also using dirty tactics, this outside spending, to make it seem like Obama has endorsed Haley Stevens when his speech about her was from years ago and was in a different context. Like, they are pulling out all the stops here. And I think particularly the Israel lobby sees this race as immensely important, and they want to make an example out of Abdul al-Sayed.
That is exactly what's happening here. Because if they can, just with sheer dollars alone, prop up one of the most unappealing candidates that you can possibly imagine, then yes, that is going to send a message to others throughout the Democratic Party, because we may like for these people to be principled and take the right stand because it's the right thing to do. But many of them, many especially of the existing elected Democrats, are just looking at where the political winds are blowing. And right now they're looking at Daria Liza, they're looking at Zoran, they're looking at Abdul, they're looking at Troy Jackson, and they're going, oh, there's a thing happening here. I'm going to have to adjust. They want AIPAC and their, you know, affiliated organizations, they want to send a countervailing message here of there is a price to pay if you shift to where not just the Democratic base, but the public at large is on the question of Israel. That is what they want to do with this race. So it is extremely consequential. It's also consequential because, of course, the knock on lefty candidates right now, and it's a constantly moving goalpost, but sure, you can win in these like deep blue districts in Denver and New York City, but let's see how you do in a swing state. Right.
It's what freaked them out about Plattner as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And so this is now going to be a marquee test of whether the type of politics we believe in can win in a swing state. So that's another reason why this has become so consequential and why they're really going to the mat over it. I mean, her tactics are disgusting. They're desperate. It goes without saying. Also, all these insinuations that he's not even just insinuations, like overtly saying that he's sexist. Based on literally nothing, smearing him that way is so disgusting. I just watched Hillary Scholten, she's a congresswoman from Michigan, who's a supporter of Haley Stevens, going on and accusing him of being sexist and launching sexist attacks on her. And her list of evidence was just like normal critiques that had no gender connotation to them whatsoever. It's so incredibly disgusting and dishonest.
And it's frequently white women that are making these cases or making these claims. And, you know, we can't ignore the Islamophobic tropes about you know, Abdullah Syed being Muslim and how Muslims are so horrible to women. That is what they're trying to imply. It's also a racist Zionist talking point. Coincidentally, Emily's List backing Haley Stevens. The DSCC is head by Kirsten Gillibrand, who is one of the biggest Israel plants in the entire United States Senate. And they are using cynical white feminist attacks of sexism against this candidate so cynically. And it comes from the exact sources that you would think it was coming from. Mm-hmm. Under Gillibrand's leadership, I think you can draw a line back to her about this because their handpicked candidate is Stevens.
And then the other thing you have is Jim Clyburn coming out and, you know, looking at some picture of an Abdul audience and saying, oh, there's not enough black faces in the audience, making a, you know, trying to do this racial resentment argument as well. And again, you look at this, you're like, she's a white lady. He's a brown guy. Like, what are we doing here? And it's just one more reminder, in case we needed them, of where this weaponization of identity really came from in the Democratic Party. It's used in its most vicious and detrimental way as a weapon against any sort of rising left movement. Hillary did it against Bernie. And so now they're trotting out, you know, the whole old playbook again, saying he's toxic, his supporters are toxic, they're low-key sexist, they're low-key racist, et cetera. I am hopeful, though. I even, you know, you look at the money, you have to be concerned, but I am hopeful that he's going to be able to prevail just because the tactics from them do feel like they're looking at some internals and going, we got a problem here. We got to try some different things. We got to throw whatever we can against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah, I will refrain from making a prediction just because I don't want to jinx anything, and it's not been a great track record.
How do you think I was going to go this year, Emma? Can you tell
us? Yes, I'm just going to avoid and swerve away from that.
Emma's knocking on the desk right
now. I mean, I literally almost... You stopped short of making a full-on prediction. You said you felt good about things, and that's not enough for me to be superstitious. I'm curious because you ran a campaign and you were the subject of a lot of dirty tactics back in the day. I remember it, you know, because you dared to go to a party and have fun. And there was it was so outrageous of you. But like, you know, I ask this of you because there's this submerged war that people aren't paying as much attention to, but I think is consequential in how it's driving the conversation, is the war of consultants, right? The knives are out for Morris Katz and for anybody that's worked on Zora Mamdani's campaign. They worked on Platner, has done some stuff for Abdullah Syed, but, you know, Katz also worked on Michael Lasher's campaign, and he's not some, like, a barn-burning lefty in New York. So, like, you know, there is an infrastructure of how campaigns are run. There is a consultant class that is genuinely financially threatened by left-wing candidates and DSA in particular surging because they don't get their massive commissions if you're doing door knocking. Even if it's more effective, we want media buys, we want ad buys, we want the commission, and they go on TV. They are consultants. You look up these CNN contributors, it's like, oh, this woman works at the consulting firm, and shock, she hates DSA and leftists, and it's never disclosed. And so I guess I'm just asking about your experience with that, your assessment of how the consultant class in the Democratic Party has grown and is whining and bitching and is a big part of, like, you know, this kind of narrative in the national press, but no one gets to acknowledge it and it's not ever disclosed.
The consultant class is basically all that the Democratic Party is, like, at its core. I mean, really, because it's not a membership organization. You know, it's not structured like DSA, where you're a member and you go to regular meetings and you participate in activities and you have internal debates about what it's going to be. It really is just basically a grift for consultants. And they are the ones that get very upset, them and, you know, the elected leaders that they're in league with, that get very upset when there's any challenge to that model. So yes, those are going to be some of the fiercest battles are actually waged. And if you are someone like Morris Katz, who is willing to upset the apple cart and work with Zoran Mamdani, then you are going to be persona non grata to them because you're sort of betraying the consultant class solidarity.
Yes.
So I think there is a lot of that going on underneath the surface. And it really is actually quite critical to the future of what the Democratic Party is ultimately going to be, because yeah, those people are going to fight for their paychecks. There's no doubt about it.
One more topic and then I'll let you go, Crystal, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So yesterday there was a violent attack, near Central Park on the upper west side. This man, whose name was Raul Morales, I believe, he was in his 50s, seemed to have some episode. He stabbed two people near Central Park on the upper west side. The first victim was an Asian man. The second victim was a Jewish man. And according to the police commissioner, Tish, Morales yelled Allahu Akbar as he attacked both of these men. The NYPD is currently evaluating this as a potential hate crime, keyword evaluating, but Zionists are literally already running with this and are trying to say that Zohran incited it. I'm not even joking. Here so is, this is just disgusting. This is Batya Sargon Ungar. Ungar Sargon, sorry. Her initials are BUS. Okay, Batya Ungar Sargon on News Nation blaming Zohran Mamdani for this and using extremely racist language as she does so.
So I just want to tell our viewers how this is being perceived within the Jewish community. New York City, of course, has the biggest Jewish community outside of Tel Aviv. Jewish New Yorkers saw him post a video targeting the Jewish state as uniquely evil, full of lies, just full of libels, garbage, nonsense. He said in that video that New Yorkers must pick up every tool they have to fight against Netanyahu and Israel. And guess what happened 2 days later? A man picked up a screwdriver and stabbed two people, including one Jew, coming out of a synagogue after prayer and shouted Allahu Akbar. He heeded the mayor's call. That video was not just a political mistake. It was a blood libel that has resulted in blood. This is how Jewish Americans are seeing this. It is horrifying, Henna. And I think you're right that a lot of the DSA members, it's not incidental that they are obsessed with Israel. It is core to the mission, so much so that a lot of the economic populism to me reads as just a beard for this obsessive hatred of Jews.
You know, he ran on affordability and foregrounded all of that in his campaign and all these specific promises just as a way to get in there and mess with the Jews. And apparently, Batya speaks for all Jewish people. I don't know what her religion is, actually, but she apparently speaks for all Jewish people, but polls would say differently. Benjamin Netanyahu's approval rating is in the net double digits with Jewish Americans, and Zohran Mamdani has a net positive, let alone what she said about the call there. I mean, heeded Mamdani's call. It's that is one of the most racist things that you could possibly say in that circumstance. And again, this man also was Hispanic. Not that it matters, but whatever.
I mean, we were talking about Kirsten Gillibrand earlier. It very much reminds of when Zohran got the Democratic nomination and Kirsten Gillibrand said that he supported jihad. Okay. And I think she never endorsed it. I mean, so there's been racist slanders of him across the board, but Batya really takes the cake here. And I also just have to marvel at the audacity of a woman who is literally right now writing a book or publishing a book on Israel, telling us we're too obsessed, you know, with the topic of Israel. But also, why wouldn't we be? You know, our country funded a genocide. I think we should all be obsessed with that in a horrified way. I think it's been one of the most revealing things you could possibly imagine about the true values and priorities of our elected leaders. So, yeah, I think people should be very deeply concerned and focused on that. But back to the point, the idea that Mayor Mamdani, in a speech where he was explicitly upholding the human rights of all people without your weird apartheid genocidal ethnostate carve-out that you want, He's upholding the humanity of all people and making a call for enforcing international law, that you would construe that as a direct call to violence. That is so disgraceful. It is such a lie. And then this throwing around of the term blood libel for literally anything, including just supporting human rights and international law, is so depraved and so counterproductive if you actually care about fighting against any kind of bigotry.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not their earnest their earnest objective. They would prefer to foreclose any conversation about Israel's genocide and what it means for, you know, American support of Israel than they would actually combating like anti-Semitism in any real way. And, you know, it's it is astonishing to me, too, that to call that blood libel and to basically imply that Zoran Mamdani, because he called on the federal government to uphold international law, was demeaning all Jews or calling violence against Jews, calling for violence against Jews. It's interesting because I think that they smell blood in the water. They think they smell blood in the water right now with Zoran, because this is maybe the one thing he said in the campaign that he's unable to deliver on, arresting Benjamin Netanyahu. But I don't think this has a poor effect on his standing. I think people are so desperate for a leader to say this, even if he doesn't have the authority, that regardless of them saying, "We gotcha, you can't actually arrest the Hitler of our time, ha ha ha," That is like in some way going to hurt him or make him look ineffective. I don't think that's how this is going to play out for them.
I agree with you. What I've seen is that people really appreciate that he even cared to try, and that he had a transparent approach and said, look, we believe in international law and this, you know, warrant should be upheld, but I just frankly don't have the power to do it here in New York City. And he has so much credibility on delivering on his promises. You know, it'd be one thing if it was just a raft of excuses. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't do affordable childcare. Sorry, I can't do the buses. Sorry, I can't do the grocery stores. Sorry, I can't freeze the rent. But on all of his key promises, he's delivered. So when he comes to you with one and says, you know, this is one that we don't have the power to actually get done, people hear that and they don't see it as an excuse. They go, well, we can tell you're trying hard. You know, we appreciate that you actually genuinely hold these values and believe in human rights and can see that it's the federal government that is failing us in that moment. So I think he gets a lot of grace from that regard too, because he's just been so good and diligent about fulfilling the promises he made and going beyond the promises he made in terms of the way that he has governed the city.
And they are just, these Zionists are so desperate to return to a place of victimhood, and they are losing credibility amongst average people as they do so. But, you know, that the anxiety that she expresses there, right, which is that Zoran Mamdani calling the prime minister of Israel a war criminal, as the ICC does. There are warrants out for Benjamin Netanyahu and for Yoav Gallant. That is the ICC's determination, which is a very pro-Western body that has typically been indicting, you know, leaders in the global south that the United States has issues with. And the U.S. did not sign on to the Rome Statute because they didn't want the United States to be held accountable. Same thing with Israel. But like the equation, equating that with blood libel and tying all Jews to Benjamin Netanyahu, this hysteria about it is very similar to what you hear about, like, does Israel have a right to exist? Then you probe into that a little bit and you ask the question, okay, how is it able to exist? Should it include the millions of Palestinians in the West Bank that are under its control and the now less than 2 million Palestinians in Gaza that are in an open-air concentration camp? Should they be included within the Israeli state that rules over them in every practical way as full citizens with political rights and human rights? Should they exist in that way? You'll hear, and you heard it in the Adam Smith interview with you, well, that's essentially erasure. What does that sound like? It's exactly what white nationalists and great replacement theory white supremacists say in this country, that that's integration and racial diversity in a state with one group of people living alongside another group of people is equivalent to killing us. We should treat these Zionists with the same level of distaste and disgust that we would a Ku Klux Klan member. And if you're at that point and you still believe in that apartheid, you have to ask yourself, how this squares with your more egalitarian views or how you view yourself if you're a Democrat who holds these segregationist views. How you view yourself in this context should also apply to Israel.
That's exactly right. And the same arguments were made in favor of apartheid South Africa. Like, well, basically the argument was, well, given how they've treated these black people, like if we give them equal rights, it's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a disaster. And it always comes down to this idea that like, oh, this group, they're such savages that like, while I in general support liberal equality, in this case, you can't do that here. That would be crazy. That would be tantamount to mass murder of Jewish people in Israel. That is the way that, you know, Adam Smith certainly articulated it in my interview with him. And mm-hmm. I think that's the way Bachi and other Zionists see it. It genuinely is the exact same ideology as what you get from the Stephen Millers of the world, where they talk about how, you know, birthright citizenship is some great attack on the country itself, how it's destroying the country that they believe in and that they grew up in. It's quite disturbing to see the number of supposed liberals who continue to hold on to this one carve out that, well, in this one particular instance, it's okay to have apartheid. It's okay if one ethnic group rules over another ethnic group, and that that oppressed ethnic group could never be trusted to actually have rights and participate in society. So I think those contradictions have really come to the forefront. Zoran's been a big part of bringing them to the forefront. You know, his answer about, do I support, you know, Israel's right to exist? And, you know, yeah. He says, as a state with equal rights, you know, that really put liberal Zionists on the back foot, because then you have to explain, well, why do you have a carve out here? Why do you support equal rights in general? But in this particular instance, you support a Jewish ethno state.
Yep, exactly right. Well, Crystal, really appreciate you coming on today, dealing with some of our tech issues. Greatly appreciate it.
No worries, been there.
Where can people find your work? I'm sure that if they're watching this show, they're already quite familiar, but just let's go through the formalities.
We do have a cool new like free newsletter product that people are really into. Yeah, it just has like a summation of the show, some links that are useful if we reference a news article or a study or whatever. People seem to really like it, and you can sign up for that for free. So breakingpoints.com if you want to avail yourself of that new thing that we're doing.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Crystal. Really appreciate your time today. Crystal Ball, co-host of Crystal, Kyle and Friends and Breaking Points. Thanks so much.
Great to see you, lady.
Yes. Great to see you as well. With that, folks, we're going to wrap up the free part of this program, I think, and head into the fun half, where you can support this. You can find it by supporting the show at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you become a member, it allows us to stay resilient when, you know, the administration is trying to tag left-wingers as domestic terrorists, for example, particularly DSA members, of which I am one of. So, you know, help protect us. Make sure that we can keep this show going, even though we're on some of these third-party platforms that are going to try to suck up to the president. You know,
I'm going
to
trust my friends in the government.
I'm not going to do that, and I'm going to trust the audience to help us out here. Join the Majority Report.
The left wanted to make comedy illegal.
You know. Oh, we'll be getting to some Elon, who's back. He decided to do an interview that wasn't entirely sycophantic, and it went really poorly for him. Really,
it's like
poorly
legalized comedy. Yeah, you can't make fun of anything.
He's gonna that one is so whiny. You can't make fun of anything these days. He's gonna have to go into the Jordan Peterson medically induced coma thing now, right? Because of the humiliation from The Economist. Machine.
My only hope and optimism about Elon Musk is that he seems to be so fucking miserable.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, it's not sustainable.
Right, right. Yeah. You're just hoping that his heart withers away in a natural manner, right?
Yeah, of course.
Right. It gets, like,
crunchy
and
small. $200 of in the economy.
Like the Grinch. Yeah. Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning?
Left Reckoning coming up right after the show today. Or, actually, Jacobin show coming up at 3 o'clock Eastern Time this afternoon. Bronco Marchetich has a piece about all the people, well, particularly like Ben Shapiro, Sean Hannity, who sold the Iran war, and the incredibly like ways they sold it. Ben Shapiro literally said, there's no way Iran will retaliate because it'll be over for them then. Turns out that is not what happened. They, in fact, closed a major strait, crippling world trade. And we also talk about the ongoing panic going on with the center. And there's a Hill article, kind of what you're talking about with Crystal, about Zohran talking about Netanyahu. And the Hill's like, all these centrist moderates are like, we just want to focus on affordability, and Zohran isn't letting us do that. First of all, y'all can't focus on anything but taking money from rich people. Nobody believes you care about affordability. You're not credible on that either. And Zohran can walk and chew gum. I think AOC literally said that, actually, walk and chew gum.
At the same time, right?
Yeah, just because there's affordability crisis that, by the way, you failed to address under the last administration, doesn't mean we can't say who is a war criminal and whether they're welcome in New York City or not.
Yeah, those things are a little should be disconnected and should be able to be like, disaggregated.
Zohran made a declaration.
Right.
Like, it's not like he's done with it.
Yeah. So dumb.
And on Left Reckoning this weekend, we talk about David Pakman going full red panic, calling himself a social democrat and also like the Scandinavians, and then also saying that he doesn't support state controlling major industries, which the Nordics do, David. But anyway, patreon.com/leftreckoning if you want to hear David Griscom and I talk about David Pakman.
Dan from Columbus says, I chuckled when Emma says she wasn't sure what Bhatia's religion is. I don't think I've ever seen her not wearing a Star of David necklace. I did not even notice that. And then I just saw that the first bio of her line in her bio on Twitter is American Jew, period. So maybe I should have picked up on that. But there are a lot of Zionists in the press who are not Jewish and are just as rabid about it and are just as insane about it. So I don't like to make assumptions about that. But I guess now I know.
Yeah, I mean, Haley Stevens really threw it off where you can't really, because everyone, even like Dana Bash, seems to suggest that she is Jewish. No, she just loves Israel.
Oh, she's not? I don't
Haley
know.
Haley Stevens?
Oh, Dana Bash, I thought. Well,
Dana
yeah.
Bash is, I think. Right. I don't know. I mean, the thing is
Zionism
I don't care.
Is an ideology that crosses yes. religion. It is not just for Jewish people. It is, Biden was the Zionist that described himself as a Zionist who helped kick off the genocide
yes.
of the Palestinian people.
They are
Mike
nationalists.
Huckabee is in Israel right now as one of the most impactful Zionists, and he's a Christian Zionist.
And it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't make you slightly better if you're a Jewish Zionist or a Christian Zionist.
Right.
You're the same nasty nationalist.
Exactly. All right, guys. We will head into the fun half now. See you there.
Okay, Emma, please.
Well, I feel that my voice is sorely lacking on the Majority Report.
Wait, whoa. Look, Sam is unpopular.
I do deserve a vacation at Disney World. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Emma to the show.
It is Thursday.
Yeah, I think you need to take over for Sam.
Yes, please.
No, I'm gonna pause you right there.
Wait, what?
You can't encourage Emma to live like this. And I'll tell you why.
So it was offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Sushi and poker with the boys. Who was offered a tour?
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
What?
Tour? Sushi and poker.
Tim's upset.
Tour?
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys. Who was offered a tour? Sushi and
that's what we call biz.
Tour? Sushi and poker with the boys.
Right.
Tour? Sushi and poker.
We're gonna get demonetized.
I just think that what you did to Tim Pool was mean.
Free speech.
That's not what we're about here. Well, look at how sad he's become now. You shouldn't even talk about it. I think you're responsible.
I probably am in a certain way, but let's get to the meltdown here.
Tour, ugh. Sushi and poker with the boys.
Oh my god.
Tour,
wow.
Sushi.
I'm sorry, I'm losing my fucking mind.
So it's offered a tour?
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
Logic.
Tour, sushi and poker with the boys. Boy.
Tour, I think I'm like a little kid. I think I'm like a kid.
Tour,
I think I'm like a little kid.
Add this debate 7,000 times.
A little kid. Think I'm like a little kid. Think I'm like a kid.
I'm losing my fucking mind.
Some people just don't understand.
So I'm not trying to be a dick right now, but like, I absolutely think the U.S. should be providing me with a wife and kids.
That's not what we're talking about here. Okay, all right.
It's not a fun job.
Tour?
That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
Boss. Willy Wonka.
Tour?
That's a real thing.
That's real thing.
Real thing.
What's that offered to tour?
That's a real thing.
That's real thing.
Real thing.
Boss. That's
a real thing.
That's real thing.
Real thing.
Boss.
That offered to tour?
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Rogan has done it again.
That offered to tour?
That's a real thing.
That's
poker with the boys.
I think he might be blowing it out of proportion.
Real thing.
That's
poker with the boys.
That
offered to tour?
That's a real thing.
That's
live YouTube.
Sam has like the weight of the world on his shoulders. Sam doesn't want to do this show anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
It was so much easier when the Majority Report was just you. You were happy.
Let's change the subject.
Rangers and Knicks are doing great.
Now shut up. Don't want people saying reckless things on your program.
That's
now,
one of the most difficult parts about this show.
This is a pro-killing podcast.
I'm thinking maybe it's time we bury the hatchet.
Left is best. Trump violet twerk.
Don't be foolish and don't fucking tweet at me and don't bitch. The way Emma has cucked all of these people.
Love it.
That's where my heart is, so I wrote my honors thesis about it.
Oh, she wrote an honors thesis. I guess I should hand the main mic to you now.
You are to the right of me on foreign policy.
We already fund Israel, dude. Are you against that?
That's a tougher question. I have an answer to.
Incredible theme song.
I Bumbler.
Emma Viglin, absolutely one of my favorite people. Actually, not just in the game, like period.
We are back. It is the fun half of the Majority Report.
Wool cry!
Reading some IMs here. Ryan from Santa Monica. Christian Zionists are actually worse because the vast majority of them are, in fact, anti-Semites. I've been in the room with them, and they thought they were amongst their own, and the Jew jokes could have come out of Henry Ford's hate books. They support Zionism because they want to be raptured and the Jews to suffer for killing Jesus.
I mean, some of them certainly, but I would say there's a fair amount of anti-Semitism inherent to Zionism itself. Yes. And definitely racism.
Jewish Zionists are quite anti-Semitic about the Holocaust survivors being weaker than, you know, I mean,
anti-Zionist Jews currently.
Exactly.
They call them demented and say, don't listen to those people. They're crazy.
Right. I mean,
like, these are different variations of nationalists. There's a lot of nasty stuff going on.
Every interview Brad Lander does is they're implying he's a bad Jew. it's disgusting.
It's disgusting. And everyone sees it.
Yeah. Michigan Fist's app is rough today. Caught the main show on YouTube, but had to switch over for the fun half.
Yeah, we had some kind. Is the app still tough? I mean, we got Twitch back up. It's harder to monitor the app status.
Dark Soul says, really love sarcastic how we have to focus so much on this, but never seem to linger on things like when those Israelis were shot in the U.S. because a U.S. citizen thought they were Palestinian, or the child that was stabbed by the neighbor, citing this rhetoric against Muslims and Palestinians.
And I'm sorry, to the extent that we are going to look at violent acts by troubled people and call it anti-Semitism, which I think you can in various cases, the problem is not what anti-Zionists are doing. The problem is what the state of Israel is doing in the name of all Jewish people. And it is infantile that we can't acknowledge that. And yes. it's been something that's been apparent and been written about by any kind of writer talking about this, but especially Jewish writers. Tony Judt has been saying, well, he's dead now. Judt was saying this during the Bush administration.
Let's do then Elon here. Elon Musk decided to sit down with The Economist, and this was not an agreed-upon sycophantic interview, which is typically how this man-baby likes to position himself. He doesn't want to be asked any tough questions. But really, here, she didn't have to try that hard because he's not very good at arguing his positions. He's kind of a drugged-out loser that is adept at making a lot of money and, you know, packaging his worthless AI into SpaceX to get a really, really lucrative IPO and getting government contracts to fund his companies. And then, you know, once SpaceX is trading at this record high, maybe time for some people who need to be made whole after they took Twitter private, which he also included in SpaceX and just packaged it in there. Maybe they need to be made whole and they can sell their stock at this really high price and the retail investors are left holding the bag. That is Elon Musk's talent.
I will say, like, those retail investors that still trust Elon Musk do deserve it, but it's a shame for all, like, the pension funds and other things that wider effect of the economy that might happen when this completely collapses.
Right. And so that is his best skill. And shamelessness, perhaps.
And comedy.
Right, of course. We can't forget about the gift of gab.
And we're no
we don't need to play those.
Okay. Yeah, it keeps going, folks. Here is Elon Musk on with Zanny Minton Beddoes of The Economist, and she asks him if he's racist.
People say that you're a racist. What is the motivation for doing that? Are you fermenting?
My partner is she's half Indian, and and I have four children with her. One of them was named after a famous Indian physicist.
Case closed.
Yeah, no racists in India.
I know. He's about to show exactly that, Matt, in just a second. Because please don't look up how Narendra Modi feels about Muslim people
or the
majority of, or the caste system. Anyway, don't look up how, like, there were many, many racists that had children with black people, for example. Didn't someone named, was it Strom Thurmond, who had a secret child black? One of the most racist members of our federal government of the 20th century, let alone Thomas Jefferson, who sexually assaulted his slaves and they had children by him. So, this is not proving the point that he thinks it's proving.
Get back to Locke.
Named after a famous Indian physicist. So I would say I'm not racist. And also, if you look at the people that are employed at my companies, we have senior executives of all races. I don't think there's any racism there.
Are you anti-Muslim?
I am.
Yes.
I'm against, having, if people are coming to a country with antithetical views.
What, like white South Africans?
Antithetical views. I am against that. I'm against that. You know, I'm against, I'm against rape and murder. I'm against,
that was a minute. He's not a racist. Are you anti-Muslim? I just hate how much they rape and murder everybody.
So, I mean, one thing that she could have followed up on is, you say all your companies, I don't know what, you promoted some, Indian guys or whatever. I'm not sure what he's referring to there. There is a lawsuit that probably led him to leave California where the types of racism that was endemic to his factories.
Yes.
Segregation
things
practices. That I don't feel comfortable quoting in that lawsuit of, like, slurs just being regularly used for black workers in that factory. This is a Nazi. He is a white supremacist like his daddy. He's from South Africa. The comment he said about apartheid was he didn't think it was worth his life staying there to enforce it. That's not an anti-apartheid statement. That's a good luck, guys. I'm going to go make a bag in another country statement.
I lost the apartheid piece, and so I guess it's time to get rich elsewhere. And I can maybe build a bunker where I don't actually really have to meaningfully interact with anybody who's a different color because I'm wealthy enough and they can just be my servants in that instance. Elon Musk also supported AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland party in the German elections. I guess that was last year at this point. They are so extreme that they Holocaust denial is supposed to be illegal in Germany, and sometimes it is used cynically to attack members of the pro-Palestine movement. But in this instance, there was actually legal concerns about the AfD being so Holocaust denial-y that it was going to present issues for them in the elections. That's the party that this non-racist, according to Elon himself, supported.
Elon Musk, the Wall Street Journal's investigation based on interviews with over 48 individuals and supported by text messages, emails, and other documents shed light on a culture of harassment and inappropriate behavior within SpaceX. But yeah, he hates the Muslims for all the sex crimes they do against women.
Yeah, exactly. but I harassed women of all colors.
I'm sorry, I did that. Would you like to a horse? Would you like a horse? That's apparently literally something he did. He offered a horse to a woman he groped.
Jesus. I put a tear sheet in there that showed how much his impact on the groom gang story in England. Like, when he started tweeting about that, searches went up like 50,000%, and like he's had a huge impact on this rape gang myth.
Well, I mean, this is a white supremacist myth as well that we talked about yesterday. But let's finish the clip.
I'm against the, you know, I'm against
against.
I'm against rape and murder.
Wow.
I'm against.
Wait, okay, actually, now I have to pause it.
Says the military contractor.
Which is why I support Donald Trump and was begging Jeffrey Epstein to let me on his island after there were public accusations. He was already convicted by this point when Elon Musk was sucking up to him. Okay, but he hates rape and murder. Got it.
Put that on a slogan, you know,
yes.
Or a poster.
I mean, controversial.
Yeah. I mean, the question was about Muslims, Elon.
Right.
The imposition of rules and laws that are contrary to what we've come to accept in the West. And I think it's a crying shame that the sort of traditional media like you, don't recognize this.
Okay.
Easier when you just throw a Hitler salute.
She must be devastated from that takedown.
Wow. Traditional media like you. He couldn't even look her in the eye as he does it.
Such a wuss.
What a loser. Here's another part of this. This is him being confronted by the same reporter who is British about his claims that the UK is on the verge of a civil war, once again, based on Islamophobic tropes.
This is what we were talking about PBD and that supposed report by the psycho right-winger that said, like, a million rapes caused by Muslims.
Right. And here, this journalist, she's British herself, is like, hey, so I actually live here and I'm from here. When's the last time you were in the UK, and how can you declare that a civil war is imminent?
Nonsense.
Yes, Elon, you have, what is it, close to 250 million followers on X.
Yeah,
you say things like,
popular guy.
Quote, civil war in Britain is inevitable. Just a question
on the current
of when.
Trends, yes.
I mean, when were you last in the UK?
A few years ago.
Exactly. So I live there. I'm there the whole time. That is nonsense.
You live out a cloistered existence.
No, I don't, actually. And the numbers also just.
Oh, my God.
Trillionaire just
said
that?
Oh, my God. You are saying she lives a cloistered existence?
Trillionaire.
Elon, when's the last time you went for a walk in an urban area alone?
Right. When's the
look at my jacket. It's a jacket of the people.
Exactly. When's the last time you walked a city block instead of going from the office to the town car to your compound? Then in the morning going from your compound to the town car to the office? If you're going into your office at all. But she's the one that's cloistered.
In your ivory tower.
I like the ivory park.
Can I say, like, only someone that lives in a cloistered existence would do this. SpaceX, the Aerosmith firm. Yeah, the guy who owns a space company, finally, Elon Musk, the world's wealthiest man, paid a flight attendant $250,000 to settle a sexual misconduct claim against Musk in 2018 inside of his room. The attendant worked as a member of the cabin crew. She accused Musk of exposing his erect penis to her, rubbing her leg without consent, and offering to buy her a horse in exchange for an erotic massage. Says that down-to-earth guy did
man
that.
Of the people who knows what's up. and who's super popular because he has a lot of followers on the platform that he purchased.
And made, like, a vehicle that, like, was sold as, you can drive through riots in this because you're clearly as afraid of everyone like I am.
Do you think that it's good that we have, like, the richest person on the planet who has the mentality of a child whose parent let them beat them at chess or something like that and thinks that he actually won? Is that a good thing?
A few years ago.
Exactly. So I live there. I'm there the whole time. That is nonsense.
You live out a cloistered existence.
No, I don't, actually. And the numbers also disprove what you say.
What numbers?
All the numbers about crime. London is a much safer city than any city in the United States. Violent crime in the UK is not where you think it is. In fact, it's coming down. You have painted...
By the way,
because you have so many followers, so many...
Much stricter gun laws in the UK.
Andrew Tate did this about, like, you can't go out in London. It's like... Yeah, you can. Yeah. It's a very safe city. What are you talking about? It's actually safer to go out in these cities than it is, like, high gun ownership cities in America.
And in America, crime is precipitously declining as well. It's just not a problem in these wealthy countries in the way that they want it to be.
Where you think it is. In fact, it's coming down. You have painted, and because you have so many followers, so many Americans believe it, a kind of view that... Europe and the UK are kind of, you know, overrun with terrifying Muslim immigrants. There's rape on every corner. There's a sort of civilizational destruction.
I haven't said any of those things. If you have large and growing, rapidly growing group of people whose beliefs are antithetical to Western beliefs, at some point there will be a reckoning. They will try to implement their views, and those who oppose it will oppose it, and that's what you call civil war. And obviously, this is the trend. And you absolutely do live in a cloistered existence. And if you'd like, we can go on a tour of Britain.
Sure.
I'd be very happy to come on a tour of Britain. And you will see
you
for yourself.
You come see my country that I live in all the time, and you haven't been to a few years ago.
I've been there literally 100 times.
But when was the last time?
Literally a few years ago.
You know why this exercises me? Because you have really shaped opinion about the UK. And so many Americans I come across, and I have conversations with, and they'll be... And I just had one the other day.
These dumb
along
hogs.
The order
listen
of, oh,
to
London's
you.
Such a dangerous place. How can you know? There are sort of grooming gangs everywhere. There's violence everywhere. This is a picture that people get from things that you post or that are posted on X. And, for example, your posting for, what was it, 48 hours of Citizen Vigilante. That film which, yes. You know, paints a dystopian... I've watched it.
Yes.
It was not fun. I watched it yesterday. It's not a very good movie. But it also paints a dystopian picture of Europe, and it glorifies vigilante violence. It glorifies the murdering of a Muslim immigrant family. I honestly think that it is irresponsible for you to put that up on X.
I think that it's a movie, and it's worth watching.
Yeah, no, because you're a Nazi. Do another Sig Hill. This is just what the international far right is doing. It's just a different target in the UK. It's Muslims, whereas in America, it's we need to send in the National Guard. We need to create a new agency called ICE that has a budget greater than the FBI because the scary immigrants are here. It is the exact same horseshit, and this is in our history books about the actual Nazis that Elon Musk likes.
Yeah.
About what they did to demonize Jewish people in the between World War I and World War II. It's the same fucking playbook. It is so obvious. And it's time people draw the lines. It's happening throughout the entire world. This is the only playbook they have. Demonize the other.
Right.
By the fucking richest people. Nigel Farage is a goddamn banker.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, in Europe, it's especially pronounced, too, because they are experiencing immigration due to proximity to parts of the Middle East and stuff and other areas in the global south that are experiencing all of this acute impacts from climate change and also destabilization. And so this is their flavor of nativism as we have our own with ICE, as you mentioned, Matt. But I just got to give the UK credit for this. Their left isn't where our left is right now. We're a little bit ahead with DSA, although congrats to them with the Greens having success. But man, I do appreciate that their reporters will still be condescending as hell to people that deserve it. They do
rich
this.
Rich people, yeah.
Yes, and the press has no compunction about it. And it's such a stark contrast, the way she spoke to him, this woman from The Economist, versus Jake Tapper saying, thank you, please, sir, can I have another, when Donald Trump calls in and says, I don't want to talk about what you want to talk about. Do you think that woman would have like been okay with, I want to give her credit. I mean, I know it's a right-wing
paper.
Yeah,
she probably
sucks. But okay, but yeah, Zani Minton-Bendo-S, I guess is her name. But regardless, it's just very, it's jarring when you see how different it is.
Well, it's not very often a reporter who went to Oxford and Harvard has like the working class upper hand on somebody they're interviewing.
Exactly. But I do appreciate the sneering condescension. That's all.
No, I love it.
That's I care about.
I just can't believe she left that on the table. Maybe she assumed the viewers are smart enough to suss out the cloistered existence thing
on their own.
Yeah,
Elon Musk was literally born.
She had pointed that out.
He was literally born in apartheid South Africa, which was like white cloisters in a black country.
Yes.
He's also the only walking trillionaire.
Right. I'm as down to earth as it gets.
Yeah, let's fly commercial to England.
And let's. And I want to live on Mars.
I mean, this is...
What's the opposite of down to earth? Up from earth? That's where you're at, bro.
This is what PBD was talking about, too.
Yeah.
Like, this is the same... It's a coordinated propaganda to give the right something to run on.
Yep.
Hysterical racism.
Yep. Disgusting. Thaddeus Grandma says, Elon accusing a reporter of living a cloistered existence is like Sam Teter accusing Dave Rubin of abandoning his podcast.
We should have cut some setups from Sam being like, you won't believe what Dave Rubin said this time.
I know.
Here is a crazy Ben Shapiro clip. Actually, should we get to Dave? Because he is not doing well.
Yes, we'll get to it in a sec. Scrounger, I am always confused by right-wing statistics. They triple like the number of actual people on Earth versus the endless supply of zombies in a zombie movie. Yeah. Some guy. Elon is not a racist weirdo. He just plans to artificially impregnate women of all races to spread his superior genetics throughout the world, then galaxy.
I mean, racism, it's crazy, this anti-immigrant stuff, the way it is killing these societies. In the UK, there's a cost of living crisis that is very acute in terms of, like, elder care, because that's not covered under NHS and stuff like that. And guess who does those jobs? Immigrants. Same thing happened in Germany. There's a lot of immigrants. A lot of the people who had to take refuge there were allowed to go in there and work as nurses and stuff like that. And they want to throw them out. Now, they rely on them because the birth rates in these countries has fallen off a cliff, in part because of massive inequality and the sort of stagnation of capitalism.
Yeah. All right, we can do what numbers? Oh, here it is, 20. John Stewart interviewed Zoran Mamdani. John Stewart said some things that weren't...
You mean John Leibowitz? As Dave Rubin's going to remind us here.
Are you joking?
Nope.
No.
That is literally a 30 Rock bit.
It's also Trump started this.
Yes, this is an anti-Semitic thing that you hear about John Stewart, where, God forbid, oh, he has a stage name, as if nobody has ever had that. But there's a Jenna quote where she says, Natalie Portman, whose real last name is Hirschlag, by the way. And Liz goes, I don't know why that's relevant. And she goes, I just think people should know. That's essentially what this is. Like, Dave is taking his opportunity to call John Stewart, you know, I don't know, something anti-Semitic as a Jewish man himself.
When we talk about
Zionists love to do that.
When we talk about Zionists being anti-Semitic, we're going to back it up with the next couple minutes of this clip here.
Here we go. So he's upset that John Stewart decided to speak to Zoran Mamdani and
the jihadi.
Calls John Stewart some pretty gross things here, so...
this Dave, goes crazy.
Dave is really taking full advantage of what is... Look, I don't know what the case is, but we did show earlier this week that the Wall Street Journal had reported that Israel is engaged in a multi-tens of millions of dollars influence campaign here in the United States via Brad Parscale, the Cambridge Analytica guy who used to work on Trump's campaigns, and that they're also in coordination with certain influencers. And last year, Benjamin Netanyahu met with Dave Rubin and Tim Pool, who are both curiously quite pro-Israel these days, Dave in particular. Just throwing that out there. But here he is about how Jon Stewart dared to talk to Zoran.
It's podcast. And again, I hit Jon Stewart pretty hard yesterday. He should have been what Bill Maher is, which is a standard bearer for liberalism. You know, they always used to say for 20 years in America, everybody always used to say more young people get their news from The Daily Show than anywhere else. I never bought that. I never thought that was actually true. But he was somewhere that was out there, let's say, on the left. Not completely insane, and you can say he was funny or not funny or whatever, as you know, I interned for him.
I'll say he's not funny, and his politics have always sucked. Bill Maher is somebody who was saying, yeah, we should have gone into Vietnam because we needed to show the world what
we were
about.
Oh, he's talking about Stewart there, though.
Oh, Stewart?
No, but he's talking about Stewart should have been like Bill Maher, who upholded liberalism. And to the extent that he upholded liberalism, it's a liberalism that should be torn down.
Exactly.
Insane, and you can say he was funny or not funny or whatever. As you know, I interned for him at The Daily Show in 1999.
As you know,
did not know that.
No one cares.
Little lore dump.
Well,
there.
It is very revealing because it tells you that all this is coming from a place of jealousy. Like he talks about Stewart's net worth. Like he wanted to be, you know, he's a shitty comedian who interned at The Daily Show.
A shitty comedian. Yeah. What makes you say that he's a shitty comedian? It would have been.
There we go.
27 years ago. You guys weren't even born. You weirdos. Anyway, it was a long time ago. So this is not personal in some sense. But unfortunately, he has decided to dive all in on all of the leftist lunacy. And he seems to want to become a DIMMI. DHIMMI, a DIMMI, and that is someone who lives in a Muslim majority society who has separate laws, separate ways of life, probably has to pay the jizya, that is the tax to their overlords. And it is worth noting that his real name is Jonathan Leibowitz. So he's a big Jew, but he loves that they are ushering in the Muslim communist socialist over there. Here they are.
Being a Muslim democratic socialist, I thought it would be pretty straightforward.
You just saw like well, what if I label myself something that scares people the most? I'm a Muslim democratic socialist.
If you scare him, you scare him twice.
he's just a Muslim democratic socialist. And the funny thing for you, Jon Stewart, is that you're really boy. Rich Jew. You're worth $120 million. And your last name's Leibowitz. So when they come and they start beheading people with machetes, you're going to be one of the people that they get. But it'll take a little extra time because, they'll go for the other Jews first and the other DIMMIs first because you're a useful idiot ushering in their nonsense. What Jon Stewart has become.
Can I stop right there?
Never start again.
Yes. Can I quit the show? I'd like to leave this industry forever.
How did they not give him The Daily Show with those kind of chops?
I mean, come on. So
this is a full-blown meltdown.
I need to understand what DHIMMY means. Please help me out. What does DIMMI even mean?
That's apparently, I guess.
It's not an acronym for anything.
It's a term maybe in Arabic, I don't know, for non-Muslims within a Muslim society.
It's like being a Palestinian in Israel.
Oh, gotcha. Right.
Yeah, imagine that, yeah.
Right, so like it's like being a second-class citizen and who is ruled over by another religiously motivated psycho entity that wants to make you a second-class citizen and strip your rights away and probably kill you. That's what Dave is saying?
Actually, it's better. I'm looking at the definition. It's actually better than being a Palestinian.
Okay. Well, I mean,
so oh, yeah.
It's a historical term in Islamic law referring to non-Muslim citizens of Islamic states. Literally translates to protected person, grants individuals legal protection, property rights, and freedom of religion in exchange for loyalty and a payment of a special tax known as jizya.
And even the jizya, from what I'm glancing at here, it looks like that's just to go in place of the tax that would be applied to Muslims. But okay, you're not a Muslim. We need to tax you somehow. It's like how electric cars, it's like, okay, you don't take gas, but that's how we pay for the road, so we're gonna have to tax you somehow.
I kind of got lost in
the Zionist fixation on terminology.
Right, exactly. Anyway,
I mean, this type of vocabulary, this is how Zionists talk to each other. They're getting increasingly insane, as Dave is proving.
And he's also right now, they're also making divisions between the good Jews and the bad Jews. Jews who decide to consider that Muslim people might actually be human beings as well, versus people like Dave, who, you know,
they're enemies and conquerors,
are unburdened by those moral anchors.
With machetes, you're going to be one of the people that they get, but it'll take a little extra time because, yeah, they'll go for the other Jews first and the other dhimmis first because you're a useful idiot ushering in their nonsense. What John Stewart has become here is a capo. He is a capo. And you know what that is? We'll even give you, I think we pulled up the actual definition of what a capo is. A capo, which is the shortened from the German word for corporal or foreman, was a prisoner forced by the SS, the Nazis, to supervise forced labor and administrative tasks. While some use their situational authority to protect fellow inmates, many abused their power and acted brutally. They were hated by other prisoners and often targeted during camp liberations. And you can read more at the Holocaust Museum website. But that's what he is, right? Like, he's a Jew. Remember, Leibowitz, not Stewart. That's your real name.
God,
and
dude,
you are very excited that a Muslim socialist is on the way. And the more power the Muslims get in America, the less freedoms there will be. And I suppose maybe you do want to submit to Islam. But you right now are running cover as all of the bad ideas are ushered in. And again, John Stewart, even if you weren't a Jew, which I don't know that you're a Jew other than you probably have a bagel every now and again, you might want to be a little more concerned about the socialist thing on the way because you're worth $120 million. So right now, yeah, they're going for the trillionaire, the one trillionaire who you used to love, and they're going for the billionaires, and I guess you're not a billionaire yet, but eventually it'll be for the 100 millionaires.
Okay,
and then your head will be on a stick, and you might say...
So that's the part I wanted.
Oh, wait, then go back then. I missed it. I'm sorry.
Then here's what he says, what's happening to the 100 millionaires and trillionaires.
It was just a little bit difficult to hear this incredibly bigoted screed against a Jewish person coming from this guy's
mouth.
This
is typical Zionism.
Yeah.
It's the love. And they're going for the billionaires. And I guess you're not a billionaire yet, but eventually it'll be for the 100 millionaires. And then your head will be on a stick. And you might...
Now, are we putting heads on sticks?
No, apparently not.
Where is the... I mean, it's already July, Zoran. I haven't seen one billionaire's... Yeah. One dimmy's head on a stick yet.
What is Zoran doing? He says he can't... You know, he's delivering on things like free buses and the grocery stores and taxing the rich. But I have not yet to see the billionaires' heads on spikes.
This is why Zionism is the same as any kind of utterly rancid nationalism. It is built on racism. And it is as rancid as, like, the anti-Semitism from Jewish Zionists is rancid just like the anti-Semitism from Christian Zionists.
Yep. The way that he casually just called another Jewish man a capo there to essentially say that John Stewart is a Nazi collaborator, when you are a fascist collaborator as we speak...
He's had him on his show, literal Holocaust deniers.
And he opens up, it's not personal because I interned on his show, and then he goes to say the most horrendous things that I think, really,
I'm
not Jewish.
He's not a real Jew, he just eats bagels.
But it seems pretty bad, as a non-Jew, as a Gentile or whatever, that to hear another Jewish man say those things about another Jewish man and repeatedly bring up the fact that his last name is Leibowitz. I sent the Johnson, the 30 Rock thing in the chat, which, you know, perhaps isn't worth it now, but maybe a little bit of levity just to show that they called this out. So yeah, Natalie, I think I maybe quoted this word for word, which says a lot about how millennial I am. But there you go, Natalie Portman. I just think people should know. Dave wishes he was Jenna Maroney, honestly.
I mean, this is the thing that should be put towards any Zionist, whether it's Dave Rubin or Batya Unger Sargon, they purport to speak for all Jewish people. It's like, well, what about like these very prominent, and frankly, like in terms of like prominent people that are worth listening to, they're against Israel. So like, okay, you can say John Stewart, maybe X poll says like most Jews aren't as critical of Israel as John Stewart is. Well, a lot of them are. And but then you have, they ultimately say like, well, these people are insane. These people, like, he's a capo. He's, by talking to Zohra Mamdani about democratic socialism, he's basically a guard at Bergen-Belsen. And that is fucking insane.
Yes. Yes. Let's do five here now that we're on this beat. Ben Shapiro, who is just clinging to any semblance of relevance here, is seeing an opportunity to maybe push Trump and the conservatives to continue this war with Iran. Ben Shapiro is one of the like lone conservative voices right now on the internet that at the very least isn't, you know, acknowledging Israel's genocide and its war crimes. I mean, some of the, Megyn Kelly will acknowledge it. Tucker Carlson has been critical of it, but not from a multicultural perspective. He's trying to basically accuse Israel of controlling our government.
Poor Trump can't do anything.
He, yeah, absolving Trump and the U.S. empire of its abuses. And Candace Owens is just out to lunch. But Ben Shapiro was trying to hold strong, and his views are suffering because of it. So now he's just doing kind of direct appeals, I think, here to Trump and to the Republicans. Here he is urging him and the administration to continue the war in Iran.
I get why people are confused and upset. It feels like things are stalemated, that they're getting broader and more difficult. Why? Well, because what the American people want is victory. There's this bizarre notion in foreign policy that the American people are deeply worried about the immediate cost of war to the enemy. That the American people, that we can't handle the ugliness of war for even a day, that every conflict has to be totally antiseptic.
Can you pause for a second? I mean, we're also talking about, even if this isn't pertaining to the war, we're talking about the economy and people's pocketbook.
Yeah, that's all that matters, really.
Oil, like, is above crude is over $100 a barrel at this point.
Yeah.
Gas prices are climbing above $4 a gallon nationwide, and it's going to keep getting worse. Like, why is he hand waving these extremely practical economic considerations? How about the fertilizer? How about the fertilizer issues? Like, our farmers are hurting because of this war in Iran. So he talks about it in this extremely high-minded way that I find to be off-putting, but let's continue.
I wish that this was an unpopular war because of, like, it started off with intentionally bombing a school of little girls. But really, it's because it's moved gas prices over $4.
Yes, and this stupid administration didn't bother manufacturing consent for it and just decided on a whim to do it.
Handle the ugliness of war for even a day, that every conflict has to be totally antiseptic. And here I'm not even talking about the American willingness to undergo casualties. No one in America wants American casualties. It's a tragedy and a horror.
Wait, did you understand that?
Yeah, he was in neither the IDF nor the U.S. military.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
He was writing screenplays.
Right. Look, I mean, look, that can be really difficult. I mean, have you ever had to try to pitch a screenplay? I mean, I know. It's like a war zone.
I actually did both. I did the military and pitched a screenplay.
And would you say that the screenplay pitching was a little bit more dangerous?
Yes.
Okay.
Completely.
Warfighter Shapiro.
No one wants casualties, but...
But I don't really... But you gotta withstand this pain.
Casualties. No one in America wants American casualties. It's a tragedy and a horror. We do understand that war does come along with casualties, and we are willing to undergo those casualties in pursuit of an end.
I'm willing to undergo other people's casualties.
Exactly. in pursuit of... ... Israel's interests. Got it. Okay.
Of an end and a victory for America. But as far as the idea that, for example, America, we can't hit Kharg Island because the Iranian people would then be deprived of oil resources. The American people are, I should say, not particularly concerned about that. We are far more concerned with why we're there not winning. I think what we actually ought to do.
Nice little cut there. I'll say, like, the hit Kargon. Yeah, we can hit Kargon with a missile. The reason we've delayed doing it, and we still might, obviously, is it would be an escalation. And that would put our allies in the region under more, who are getting completely shelled in a way we can't be honest about, under more stress if we go after their main port. And also, what good would that war crime be, Ben, if it doesn't ultimately, like, it's not going to end, like, it's not, Iran's not going to capitulate just because of that.
No, and he should probably be a little bit careful here because you mentioned the damage that's been inflicted on the Gulf state allies. Israel, at one point, Iran was bombing Israel, and it appears like they were able to get through some of the Iron Dome at some point earlier on in the war. And they did that in retaliation for Israel and the U.S. starting this war, by the way. We're not sure. I mean, what if Karg Island's bombed and the U.S. chooses to escalate, what's stopping Iran from lobbing missiles at Israel this time? They can reach Jordan. We've seen that.
Actually ought to do is say an eye for everything. Like, you touch a ship in the Strait of Hormuz and we kill the head of the IRGC. We kill Khalibaf. We kill your entire leadership class. Again, we destroy South Pars and we destroy Kharg.
That's actually too hard. What we're going to do is bomb their bridges, which again is a war crime, which would also open up to the extent Iran has capabilities in our country. Could we really say, hey, don't you shouldn't have blown up that bridge in Missouri or Baltimore or whatever, because that's a war crime. It's terrorism. Well, it's our entire strategy for dealing with the closure of the Strait of Hormuz.
An eye for everything should just be the Zionist slogan.
Yeah, right.
What a wild thing to say.
An eye for we blow the world up.
Right. You take our eye, we nuke a continent. Isn't that what Jesus said?
Yeah. One drone, and that's what happens. That is the way you win in the middle. By the way, that's the way you win generally.
No.
For sure. It worked so good in Vietnam.
Read Robert Pape and the escalation trap. I mean, look, it's an interesting framework, but he's been right so far, and showing how Trump is so susceptible to these kinds of arguments. He doesn't think he's unable to pursue diplomacy in any real way, because any diplomatic end is showing the reality, which is that the U.S. has lost this war. And the terms that would be involve a negotiated end to this are not going to be favorable to the United States. So Trump only knows how to do one thing, which is bomb. And this is Ben Shapiro literally just acting as Mark Levin has been doing on Fox News to appeal to Trump's most hawkish instincts. Ben's just doing this for an online audience that doesn't care, because everybody that likes, you know, this war is listening to Mark Levin because they're all over the age of 50. This right. is why Ben's losing an audience.
This is Ben in January, and we talk about this with Bronco March Teach on the Jacobin Show this afternoon. But just listen to what he was saying about what would happen if we decide to strike Iran.
I think most people are not generally in favor of engaging in conflicts for their own sake. Remains open to striking Iran, according to a person familiar with his thinking, believing the country is a threat to the United States. Well, I'm glad that he has changed his mind about that, because obviously he took the opposite position originally with regard to striking Fordo. The United States does not currently have an aircraft carrier in the Middle East. The United States could still use bombers, Air Force jet fighters, or naval assets to strike Iran. Iranian officials are saying they might attack the Americans. If they did that, that would be the end of the regime, bar none, end of story. So they're not going to do that in any serious way.
Spoiler alert, they did that in a very serious way.
Yeah.
And it's actually closed a major trading. But just do a few more decapitation bombings, Ben. They'll, mm-hmm. they'll sort this all out. Just take out the top of the IRGC, and he certainly won't be replaced by another guy like the very next second. They probably haven't even prepared for that.
The goal for the Zionists is just to destabilize Iran.
Turn it into rubble, a country of 90 million people.
Exactly. But I guess we're a little bit concerned with, like, the short-term brutality of that kind of thing, of destabilizing a massive country and destroying any sense of civil society that they have in committing war crimes and killing children. But sorry to be so just easily distracted from the objective of Greater Israel, Ben. Perhaps we have a little bit of a different idea about what that region should actually look like. Lord Farquaad says, in the words of Ben Shapiro, many of you may die, but that is a sacrifice I am willing to make.
Yeah, yep. I mean, literally.
Cricket Gnome's Revenge. Look at those eyebrows. We see where all the fertilizer went. Some guy. I want to hear Adam Friedland react to Dave Rubin talking about the capo. Mike from Bavaria. Oh, wow. I was wondering if Dave would go for capo. He really is an unhinged freak.
Yeah, I mean, that is as unhinged as I've seen Dave Rubin in my entire career, which says yes. Something.
Some guy, capo, the second or second oldest profession. I had forgotten. That's why we're referencing Friedland. Who said that?
Somebody said that to...
No. Oh, never mind. What was... There was, like, something about what the oldest profession was that was involved in that Friedland interview. Oh, damn it. Do you know what I'm talking about? And some IMer is going to be able to solve it for me.
I don't know what you're talking about.
John from T-Berg. Fair to say that Dave Rubin is having an emotional breakdown right now. Yes. Aiden, the transplant. I spoke too soon. The fake laughing Islamophobic rant was way more unsettling.
Yes.
Yeah. I seriously believe it's a career crisis, though. I don't think it's an ideological crisis.
I think it's all coming to a head.
I think, I mean, Shapiro's the same. It's a similar thing, right? Like, I mean, they're struggling, I think, these online Zionists right now. And Dave is just even less talented than Shapiro.
The way he kept saying his net worth was $120 million was very revealing.
Very revealing. You've witnessed that comedian resentment firsthand. Wu-Tang forever. What's going on with Elon's in's mouth looking face? The ketamine and racism must age you and hold water weight. Sheesh. I don't know the reference, but he does look like shit, so agreed.
He's a bad-looking guy.
Sam from Ottawa. Andrew Tate knew London was dangerous to walk around because he was actively predatorizing London.
Yeah. If you got warrants out, it's a little bit more unsafe, I guess.
Also, we have footage of him fighting, and I could see why he was scared.
Oh,
we need to thank whatever...
Do we have it?
No, this is the fight from a little while ago, right? And I'll just say thank... all the international police. I just want to thank all the law enforcement that decided to let Andrew Tate roam freely long enough for him to get his ass kicked on camera and then swooping in when he had the dumbest shirt in his wardrobe on.
It all worked out perfectly.
Jess from Michigan said he was referring to a Free Press article written about himself, I guess. That was the capo was the oldest profession in the history of the world. That was the claim, I think, that was what Friedland...
Free Press said that about Adam?
I think so. I'm remembering it correctly, people can correct me, but that's, I think, what that was about. Yeah.
The capo is the oldest profession?
I don't know. I mean, the Free Press is psychotic. We covered Haley Stevens before, even though there was a funny clip that I just added to our chat. Can we just watch it quickly? I haven't seen it yet. I just want to see what this is.
We're supposed to stay under the more policy-related
stuff. I don't care. I get
stuff,
to say but... it. I get to say it. I'm a woman, okay? I get to make fun of this bitch if I want to. It is my show, and I can do what I want, and I want to make fun of this crazy lady. And I'm telling you, I would. Haley, if I had an opportunity, I would switch you out with Alyssa Slotkin in a second, just because I think you guys are the same person, but you are fun and
less effective
and probably less effective and not a CIA agent. So I would prefer that you were the other senator from Michigan if we were able to have our ways, but we can't do that. And right now it's a choice between you and Abdullah Syed, who's phenomenal. And your ability to make me laugh is just not breaking the tie over your support for genocide and, like, taxing the rich and Chuck Schumer wanting you in office, for example. So I'm sorry about that. But, girlfriend, I have to be able to make fun of you for things like this. Somebody found this video of her, and I would like to see it.
I told you, Dustin, I left. How many turns do I have to do?
A lot.
Oh, sad. Brother.
Don't steam, you have to go slow.
Oh, okay.
I would love for steam to just blast her face.
Only the best pictures, okay? Oh, steam. I didn't mean to have this this year.
Now, what was in that pipe, people might not get the context for that clip, but in the pipe were thousands of dollars going straight to Israel.
Yes, right. Open up the money pipe!
It's like that Price is Right game where you're like, you gotta grab as much dollars as you can.
And then Yahoo's on the other side just like
making it rain on her. That's for me, Haley.
We need the valve wider, Haley.
And that's been piped to Earth. Wow. Dang. All right. Well, I guess that was her attending a few months ago the UA Local 333 Plumbers and Pipe Fighters building.
How do they not feel condescended to?
I don't know.
Whenever a politician like rolls up his or their sleeves, mm-hmm. or like this kind of stuff where they put on a hard hat or like turn a fucking wheel.
Right.
Like, how does that make you feel any kind of way other than condescended to?
I think because
look how easy your job is. I can do it.
It's basically like a jungle gym, you cretins. Can we watch the first 5 seconds, please?
I told you, Dustin, I left.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry to be mean. I don't mean to, you know, be accidentally advocating for women to no longer be able to vote by making fun of her. If that's what you heard from what I said, I'm sorry. I should be more articulate with my words, but I'm making fun of a political candidate who wants to do bad things to the world, who needs to be defeated in a week and a half.
It's a shame because there used to be a real true working class candidate. His name was whatever Chris Farley's character was in the Van Damme
Matt
by
Foley.
The Rangers.
Matt Foley. Of course. Please don't flag this clip for hate speech, okay?
Oh my god.
John Stewart. All of that. I think I can make fun of Haley Stevens.
You don't want to be the Dave Rubin to the Jets.
I'm just trying to make the appeal.
Have you ever seen Black Sheep? I would love to see Haley Stevens body surf across the floor of a stage and go, kill Whitey!
You've never seen Black Sheep?
No.
You got to watch Black Sheep. You've seen Tommy Boy, right?
Yes, as a kid, right?
So, like,
again, I grew up with one sister. I just want to throw that out there.
The relationship between Tommy Boy and Black Sheep, which are basically the same movie.
Yes.
It's Chris Farley and David Spade, and Chris Farley plays like a fuck up, right, in both of them.
Yes.
And David Spade plays like the sort of straight man that tries to get him on track.
Yeah.
But they're both funny. I could not. To be honest, I don't know what happens in each because they just run together as they say.
One is about an auto parts store and one is about a campaign. His brother's running for Senate.
Right, yeah. Right. The auto parts is the Tommy Boy, right?
God, but like those like kind of low-level budget comedies, just now that's just Netflix slop, all of that, in full-length features. And they're still good comedic TV shows, right? But damn, those...
Is there?
I don't know, actually, now that I see you say it, very few.
Like, I could count them on one hand, I think.
The rest are kind of over. God, that's a good comedy that's out right now. Currently.
Nirvana, the band, the movie.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I'm serious.
That's the last movie I remember. Yeah.
No, I heard that was really good. Yeah. I haven't seen it, but, you know, the last really funny movie I saw was Bottoms, baby.
I also laughed a lot during Obsession. I'm not even kidding. I think Obsession is a horror comedy.
Gotcha.
I've heard people call that a comedy. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Another horror comedy that was funny. Weapons was funny. But
not really ha-ha funny.
Not funny, funny. Ha-ha funny, I get it.
The school shooting.
Yeah.
The dad dreaming about a gun after his kid goes missing. That's hilarious.
Nassau County spokesperson, Abbott Elementary is good in my opinion. I watched the first season or so. It's very sweet. It has good politics. I wouldn't say for me it's LOL funny, but I don't really like, you know, Parks and Rec much either.
I do like Abbott. The problem is it's so, very clearly like a redo of The Office just in a public school setting.
Well, so down is Parks
to,
and Rec.
Well, down to the like the romantic interest between the main male protagonist and main female protagonist where it's like, the male protagonist is simultaneously like a casual, cool guy, but also massively ambitious because he wants to be president, whereas like, or he wants to be principal, whereas Jim, like, he's a fuck up, but also wanted to be manager.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's this weird. I'm not sure the message that's being sent there of what to like. I don't know.
But I like that actor that plays him. He was from Everybody Hates Chris, which I loved.
Funny, yeah.
I loved growing up, but
very funny. I mean, I do fuck with that, but I think it. Despite my thinking that's just a kind of a
it's
redone
sweet.
Office. Yeah.
Yeah. Commie Duberville says, someone much funnier than I noted that Tate was dressed like Elizabeth Warren when they arrested him and I nearly died. Do you think me and Brian Vokey? Yeah,
I said that.
Yeah. Devoid Reality. Dang, Dave, sounds like the capo you were described as Stephen Miller. Greg Bovino says, hey gang, it's me, Greg. I've been super busy lately speaking at some small political events where we discuss totally normal political ideas. Soon I'll be speaking at a private event hosted by Save Heritage Indiana. I heard people were planning a protest. Please don't, okay? Miss you all. Thanks, Greg, for the update. Apex Shakur, can I get a Michigan fist for my 37th birthday, which was last week? Regarding Shapiro, as you pull that up, for my adult life, two-thirds of it, at least, has been spent with my country at war. I know how to deal with that, but frankly, I'm tired of it and think giving peace and diplomacy a try is worth it for once. Agreed. And here is that for your birthday. Happy birthday.
I want the Michigan fist! I want that Michigan fist!
God, this escalating tone in the second one just gets me. That's why those work well as a pair. Yeah. He's just getting hornier as it keeps going on. Jay Tingle, Those Poor Girls is a funny series. True.
It's also true that I just don't watch TV as much as I used to.
Future Reactionary, shout out to Pandemic Anxiety, RIP the Rumble stream. Indeed, I miss our private banter in the public chat, regardless of the random drive-by hate speech that would be foisted upon us from time to time. There were dozens of us. Future Reactionary, I think you're exaggerating by saying that dozens as well.
The most I ever saw was dozen.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was the high, actually.
I have to amend myself. One of them, Days, was a good, really good comedy that had come out recently, and Bottoms.
I didn't see it.
It's because I'm working in an office with a bunch of men. You didn't see either of those, I bet, right?
No.
God damn it. Yes, there you go. All right, what should we do here? I don't know. We're just going to read some IMs and get out of here. It's been a long week. Pop quiz. What noise would Cory Booker make if he finally got that Michigan fist?
I think it'd be something like this.
Beautiful. Cricket Gnome's Revenge.
I remember the first time Lindsey Graham gave me the South Carolina fist.
Cricket Gnome's Revenge.
I'd say something like this.
That you were made obsolete by Osberg on creation.
So good, he became nonverbal. We have a request for Michigan fist leading into the Yoda. All right. I mean, this is what
I want the Michigan fist.
Canary on an Island says, is it just me or is Ben trying to Hassan Max with his haircut and facial hairstyle? Also, Emma, free my sisters and poorly plumaged brothers from the coal mines. Oh, Canary on an Island. Gotcha. Have I been saying canary in a coal mine a lot on the show? It would be a type of phrase I would repeat.
I don't recall it, and I feel like I would pick up on that.
All right. Yes, you would, and make fun of me for it.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Brian would get there first.
Yes, exactly.
Dow.
Oh, what happened to her?
I know.
That appearance was it.
The Shield of America.
That's what we should be talking about. Right. We should be talking about making Americans safe. We should be talking about, what does a Dow have to do with anything? That's what they just asked. Are you kidding?
Mr. Jordan.
What does the Dow have to do with the Epstein files? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? V says, goated Brian, love Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, Widow's Bay is pretty good. I've heard good things about that, yes.
I did watch the Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie. I will say I hadn't watched the TV show, and I think you kind of need to because I was a little bit... It was funny, but I think I... Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It's very Canadian, so be prepared for that.
We decided to talk about TV, so we're we're getting a lot of recommendations. Sean for PA, Great North and Bob's Burgers, both great comedies. Michigan Fist says, I love how Bondi kept bringing up things that came back to bite Trump in the ass. That's true. Lesbian Laura Ingram, this episode has been very lesbian focused. And Emma seems to know way more about lesbians actually display than I thought. I'm very woke, you know? Whatever.
What you are seeing is actually a display of estrogen.
Exactly right. It's a spectrum, people.
Lesbians deserve an episode.
Yeah,
one guy, right. One time.
It's funny because I don't remember what the context of that. Oh yeah, it was. Oh yeah, he supported the feds disappearing one guy one time.
Was it Garcia?
Yeah.
One guy, one time. Okay.
A certain skin color now gets their own summertime celebration.
Summertime celebration. Talk about fruity.
Anyway.
Troy Odathon, Beverly Hills Ninja remake with Haley Stevens would destroy all box office records, and if you disagree, you're lying.
What remake with her?
Beverly Hills Ninja. Grand Rapids Ninja. We wish we had a Brian Cam right now.
We called the Auburn Hills Ninja.
I can see it all. I can see all of it.
Kind of apologizing afterwards to do it using that voice.
I'm sorry, jeez.
Yeah. Oh.
Give you a little kick.
Violenter, that is one that I watched recently. Actually, I'd never seen Beverly Hills Ninja, and that was my husband's pick for the night.
It was. I haven't seen it not as a teenager. I
haven't
don't
thought
even...
of that movie since 1999.
Our pattern is like, I want to pick like foreign film that came out in 2023 that's getting some buzz.
Let's watch The Anatomy of a Fall. We'll watch Beverly Hills Ninja double feature.
I truly need it spiritually. Yeah, but
Rush Hour 2.
You know that was a literal pick.
I did love Anatomy of a Fall.
I truly love him. Yeah, what'd you say?
Anatomy of a Fall is one of my favorite
honestly,
movies.
Honestly, I was thinking
about years.
I know, we're just bullshitting now. Yeah. That was an amazing movie, and her monologue in that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Okay, we're going to read some items and then we're going to wrap up. Big Bert, hello MR crew. If the shofar isn't handy, can I get a birthday affordability for Jenny, my beautiful partner, MR member, union member, champion of the worker, and all furry creatures, Robo and Ernie, love him very much.
Well, I can only do one or the other. I can't do both, so I'll give you an affordability here.
There you go.
Affordability.
That is,
it always makes you think of a Broadway musical.
It does,
like dancers in the back.
It's Pirates of Penzance or something like that.
But remember when we played his mom and her sing-songy Welsh accent? That's where it comes from, and in the depths of his soul.
And you look at his mom and you almost don't even need to hear her talk. No, wait.
All right.
Like this woman like rode around in horse carriages.
Affordability. Oh, the plebeians. All right, guys, three more, and then we are going to have a weekend ahead of us. Violent or child, Ben is a mouthpiece for the Trump administration. If they made these statements, it would give away the game. Molly Gray Jedi, I can't remember which university suit mentioned this, but the way these countries in the Gulf rely entirely on oil and these desalination plants mean the only country that can handle the destruction of these facilities would be Iran. So Ben is basically just suggesting we make Iran the most powerful country in the region. You might have also heard that in our interview with Trita Parsi, I believe, who he might have mentioned it, just how Iran actually has like fresh fresh water for its population and doesn't need to rely on desalination plants as much as the other Gulf states. And the final IM of the week Commie Tommy, I'm rolling up my sleeves while getting the job done, while walking and chewing gum, while wearing a hard hat, because competition makes us strong.
I will fight for your stories.
So,
and dear God, if you want to come at me that way, you're going to have to take it up with me.
Same exact rhetoric. Same exact, just violent nothing.
Violent nothing, exactly. Yeah. All right, guys. Appreciate you all. Thank you so much. We have a great week next week of guests, and Sam may be back on Friday. And prior to that, we've got, like, really good guests that are lined up. I don't want to jinx anything right now, but people might be excited about someone in particular. So,
say Little John Leibowitz is coming in.
That is grandma.
I just think people should know. All right. We'll see you. See you next week.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. It's not gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.